Good evening. I'm Terry Thornton. I'm Curator of Education here at the Modern, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern, which is the museum's weekly lecture series. Tonight is our first lecture for the fall 2012 season, and we are happy to begin with artist David Dawson, who is here from London. David is a painter, having attended the Royal College of Art and maintaining his practice in his home studio in Northwest London, as well as being, of course, the longtime assistant, model, studio photographer par excellence, and friend of Lucian Freud, whose paintings, of course, are the subject of the museum's current exhibition, Lucian Freud Portraits, which is a survey of Freud's figurative work that opened at the National Portrait Gallery in London January 29th, 2012, and closes here at the Modern, which I'm happy to say is its only U.S. venue, or maybe not happy, but proud to say, and closes here on October 28th. As the British art critic Martin Gayford wrote for the Sunday Telegraph in his article highlighting David as the subject of Freud's last painting, he quote, and I'm quoting, "For the final two decades of his life, Lucian Freud spent more time with David Dawson, his model, assistant, and friend, than any other person." And tonight we have the enormous privilege of having David Dawson here to share his insights and thoughts on one of the most devoted and renowned painters of the 20th and 21st centuries. David is in conversation tonight with the Modern's chief curator, Michael Opping, who co-organized Lucian Freud Portraits with Sarah Howgate, who is also with us this evening, of the National Portrait Gallery. So if you would, please join me in welcoming both David Dawson and Michael Opping.
Thank you very much. We're focusing this talk tonight around many of the photographs that David took of Lucian and Lucian working in his studio. Lucian was a very private man, and I think his studio was a very private place for him. He didn't let many people into the studio who he wasn't painting, but David spent 20 years in and out of Lucian Freud's studio. So if anybody knows the ins and outs of a Freud studio, it's David Dawson. Let's see. Oops. No. There we go. I wanted to ask you, first of all, David, when you first started working for Lucian, which was about 20 years ago, 21 years ago, what was your first impression walking into a studio?
I'd never seen anything like it. I thought the studio was like the whole world in that one room. And it was just full of energy and concentration and these marvelous paintings. When I first walked in, there were two almost finished large paintings of Lee Bowery, which are the naked, this sort of 6 foot colossus man. And they just look remarkable. The studio's in a house in London, West London, and they're small rooms. It's not an enormous space. And I was absolutely captivated by this.
When I first went into Lucian's studio, I've been to a lot of artist studios. It's my job to go to artist studios, and I had never been in one quite like this. Yeah. As opposed to the giant white cube of an American studio. You know, this place was so intimate, and you could smell paint and you could smell human sweat.
Yeah.
It was extremely intimate and very dingy in an interesting way. I mean, did he ever make an effort to clean the studio?
It was very gently cleaned. He didn't like dust settling.
Gently cleaned. Uh-huh.
So, but you know, the walls were rubbed with raw umber, which is a very dark brown earth colour, was rubbed into the walls. And that sort of took... So the only directional light came from the window. So when the model was sitting, then all the light was coming towards the model. It wasn't bouncing off the walls in any way. floorboards. He absolutely loved painting floorboards, and that's how the house is built. The houses in London are built, so the floorboards remained. He used a palette to work with. So when he would clean the palette after mixing each colour, he would then scrape it with a palette knife and stick it on the wall. Right. And that was just so you wouldn't stand in it. It was sort of rather practical. But it built up this remarkable cave sort of like, just these globules of paint all stuck all over the walls, which were about, 10 inches deep.
So
and it just built up. It was a lovely atmosphere. I loved the atmosphere.
It was amazing. It's like walking into a grotto of paint.
Yeah.
You felt like the paint was closing in on you.
Yeah.
And there was a sense that after you looked at the paintings and then looked at the walls of the studio, because he mixed every single brushstroke before he applied it to canvas, and then would test it on the wall or test it on a palette. The walls of the studio felt like human skin. They had almost a sort of breathing quality to them.
He also would use old bed sheets as rags to clean his brushes, and these were then cast aside onto the floor. So then became mountains of these rags. You can see some in the top corner of that. And again, it just built up this really strong, particular atmosphere, which was very true to him. He didn't make a big thing of it, but it's just a working studio. And some of it did come into his paintings. It was some of it became the subject. But he wasn't trying to make an affectation, or he wasn't trying to make something more than what it was.
I don't
think a working room.
It wasn't a stage set.
No, not at all.
But having said that, I can't believe it wasn't. I mean,
it was
the bed that I saw is the bed that he had from I don't know when.
Yeah,
it was the same bed.
Yeah, yeah.
And the chair, it was the same chair. So I almost got the sense that he was trying to, for himself, just as a comfort zone, trying to recreate the sense of a post-war British studio. What it was like after the war to be kind of a poor artist in a dingy.
I don't think it wasn't. It wasn't quite like that, but it looked like that.
It did look like that.
He just wanted a very neutral space, I think, which didn't. Nothing jumped in his eye, so he could just concentrate on the person, on the portrait. But then he would use parts of the studio, corners of the studio, in some of the paintings. But it was there as a working room. It wasn't, you said, it wasn't a setup thinking it was of a certain period. It just evolved in a very quiet way, which was true to his personality.
I think that you and he were in there so much, and a stranger like me comes in, and I'm like, are you kidding? Really? This is where you work, and this doesn't distract you?
Yeah.
To him, it's just like being inside a pot of paint.
Yeah, you could say.
Very. But I wanted to talk about this photograph because, and this is again one of David's photographs of Lucien working at night, I believe. Yeah. It's one of the great photographs of Lucien Freud. But it's interesting to me because it looks like an action photograph.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder how Lucien worked. I mean, this looks like he's working very feverishly and quickly, but I have a sense that he also worked extremely deliberately.
He was very, very gentle when he actually touched the canvas with the paintbrush. It was a very considered and light touch. But in himself, he was really tense in one way and very light on his feet. He always painted standing up.
Mm-hmm.
At night time, we have the electric lights, which are rather strong, directly above you. It just gets incredibly hot, and this was in a summer evening. So that's why he took his shirt off. Mm-hmm. Just the heat was... but he wouldn't dance around, but he was very, very light on his feet. He was a very good boxer when he was young. So
really?
He believed in a touch which was resonant to his feelings.
When I would go into the studio to interview him, and you'd be in this small room, and close to him, he had an almost feral quality about him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
In a positive way.
Yeah, in a good way.
A slightly animal quality about him. There was an intensity about his body. Not a big man.
No, no.
But certainly, you know, extremely attentive.
His balance was very good, always. He would always be alive to his movements.
This is another great photo right here. This is two very famous artists, David Hockney and Lucian Freud, who also happen to be two of great British portrait painters. And here you have David Hockney, in my opinion, looking like a very naughty schoolboy. And Lucian looks like this extremely stern and strict teacher.
Rather murderous.
And don't you dare move David until I get back.
But the photograph came completely by chance in that I was just with David, wanting to take a portrait of David with his portrait. And as I pressed the button, Lucian walked through the door. And it wasn't until I saw the film that I knew Lucian was on it. It's those, the brilliance of photography where chance comes into it.
So here's the bed. I mean, it's one of the beds I'm talking about. So this isn't a brand new bed from IKEA.
It's
a horse hair mattress. From 1946, this bed. Yeah. Or the mattresses.
Yeah.
And, of course, the rags that David was talking about. So the question that everybody asks me about the people who have been painted by Lucian, did they like their portrait?
You'd have to ask each of the people.
Of course you would. Do you know if David Hockney liked his portrait?
He did.
He really did like his portrait.
Very much. He's so interested, David, in everything, and he just was fascinated by the amount of time it took to make the painting, and then and how the slowness of Lucian working helped make the painting how it is, that's what fascinated Hockney.
And he captures Hockney. I've met Hockney a number of times when he was younger, and about 10 years ago. And he has this incredibly youthful quality, and he dresses in very colorful clothing. And I mean, he's really got this. He's like a Gap kid before there were Gap kids. He's got this very groovy look
style,
to him. But what Lucian did was capture, a very mature David Hockney, a very serious and mature man.
The great thing about Hockney, he's always got something to say, so he's in mid-conversation here.
Right, exactly.
David's always got a point about something.
Well, the story goes, I don't know if you told it to me or Lucian told it to me, that Hockney had asked if he would be happy to sit for Lucian if Lucian sat for a portrait by Hockney. And so Lucian came one day and immediately fell asleep. Hockney started the painting, and then Lucian left and never came back.
Yeah, that's true. He lasted for 40 minutes.
40 minutes, and that was it. And yet Lucian, of course, asked you to sit for 3.5 hours, 2 days a week, for 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, it's usually many hundreds of hours by the
exactly.
time.
Exactly. So. Demanding.
Demanding, yeah.
So this is portrait of Paul MacLean, right? And I wanted to ask you where Lucian generally begins a portrait. I mean, does it begin with the torso? Does it begin with the head? Does he start with the eyes?
If it's a head and shoulders portrait, it tends to remain that, and it quite often starts around the forehead or around the eyes. He does a very, very rough drawing in charcoal, which is a really good drawing beforehand. He'll then just rub that out with the cloth. So there's a sort of ghost image. There's a very loose connection to how he wants to take it further. And then when he starts with the paint itself, the forms tend to develop and they become larger. The head becomes a larger portrait. And that's dictated by the forms within the paint, really, and how he tries to build up the portrait.
It is fascinating to me, though, how he starts out in detail, blurs it, and then goes into it. When I first met him, he was working on the portrait of you.
Yeah, yeah.
I came in the stage where it wasn't the char. There was some charcoal.
Yeah.
But it had been blurred.
Yeah, yeah.
And you explained to me, well, yeah, but before it was really quite detailed. It looked like a Franz Klein.
Okay.
Painting to me, it was like this series of things, and then your body kind of grew out of that over yeah. my visits.
He paints in very small areas, and it just builds up and builds outwards. So he doesn't work on, say, the top corner and then the bottom corner and or all over. It's just a very small area, brings it up to a very high level of, not finish, but then works on maybe the ear or the cheekbone, or it comes down to the chin. And it all adds and adds, and the forms then take over as to how the structure of the face, that then sort of becomes the influence.
So this is, of course, Lucian Freud painting the Queen. And, you know, knowing how demanding Lucian is and the fact that he's an eccentric, sort of feral guy, the question is, so how did this go? Did that go well?
I think so.
Did they hit it off right away?
Yeah, I think. They had a common interest in horse racing.
Uh-huh.
That's a good point to start conversations on. They actually, because of the same age, they actually knew this group of the same people. But he enjoyed her company. She's very, very alive to everything that's going on. I mean, not a huge art fan, but mm-hmm. but interested enough in everything that, you know, I think the portrait stands up to that, that it's got some life in there.
This is one of the very few portraits that Lucian ever did not in his studio, because yeah. I think it would be difficult for the Queen to show up.
It was almost going to happen, but it got sort of it got too complicated.
So we went to the palace. Went to the palace. But what's fascinating to me, and I don't know if you can see it in this. Yes, you can. Clearly, someone, and I assume it's Lucian, chose the ugliest room in the palace. There's a crack in the wall.
Yeah.
There's an electrical outlet. This is the Queen of England.
Yeah.
You know, and it, to me, that's classic Lucian
Freud. It is, and it's a very, very... It's the restoration studio for many of the paintings owned by the Royal Collection. So it's this very small little part of the stables, in a way, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exactly that. It was a room that Lucian felt he could work in, wasn't sort of overtaken by gilding and
exactly.
high ornate. So, yeah, the Queen would come out through the back, through Clarence House, and arrive very discreetly.
Well, there's a couple of other things about it. One is we are dealing with one of the greatest world leaders of our era when you think of what she has been through.
Yeah.
All of the great world leaders
yeah.
she has known and guided her country. I can't think of too many American world leaders of her stature in a way. And yet he's painted her almost smaller than life size. It's a headshot, but it's almost... it's almost the size of her head, but not quite.
It's about this,
you know. Thing. And she's a small woman. I've ever met her in person.
But when you see the painting in real life, it, you know, from a great distance, mm-hmm. it really holds the wall. But again, partly the size is dictated by knowing there was a limited amount of sittings that he would have.
Right.
That did slightly come into it.
Someone in the British press said that. Said that they were very upset with the portrait because it looked like he gave her a mustache. But there is some shadow underneath her nose. I'm certain one doesn't really know how pleased
the Queen would never ever
would never say.
Say. There's one thing she does not give personal opinion.
Right, right.
So we never know.
Now, Lucian said to me, and maybe I'm repeating something I shouldn't be repeating, when I talked to him once, he said, I asked him if she sat for the whole time, and he said basically yes,
yeah.
but she had to leave at a certain point and she couldn't do it anymore. So did he borrow her tiara? Or?
Yeah, it was a way of just being practical, really. So the courtier, the young girl that would always come along with the Queen, we asked her to sit with the tiara.
So he could paint the tiara. He'd already painted it. It took an awful lot of time
because it is just full of the most amazing jewels. And then the queen would come and take more sittings after the tiara had been painted, the diadem.
And to be fair about Lucian's depictions of other people, if people think Lucian is hard in his interrogation of people's faces and their bodies, he's equally hard on himself. I mean, he's equally honest.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what his self-portraits are about. This is what you see when you meet Lucian Freud in the studio. He's an intense man. But what this photograph that you took of him shows that he's also got a whimsical side.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know the context of this.
This is me. I'd arrive first thing in the morning, very early. So I'd always go and sit with him while he's having a shave and tell him what was, gossip of what happened the night before. But he'd shave with the paintbrush. That's how he worked. That's how
really?
He was. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. His shaving brush was a paintbrush.
Sable hair or
sable
hog's
hair, yeah.
Sable hair brush, I would think, because it'd be a little softer.
So that's me just chatting first thing in the morning with
there
him, with the camera.
Good morning, David. So this is a portrait of Lee Bowery, the Australian performance artist.
Yeah.
And so you were his assistant during some of these paintings, correct?
Yeah, these are the paintings I first saw when I walked into the studio for the first time.
Now, I've seen Lee Bowery's performances. I've never met Lee Bowery.
Yeah.
I have met Lucian. Lee Bowery is a very large man, like 6 foot two, 310 pounds.
Yeah, must be that, yeah.
And Lucian's small and very agile and really he looks quite fit.
Yeah.
He always looked fit to me.
He was.
How did those two interact?
Lucian really enjoyed Lee's company through his sort of anarchic fearlessness of doing outrageous things. He was sort of enjoyed that. He enjoyed Lee's sort of humour.
Mm-hmm.
And also through the performance, he rather enjoyed Lee taking the poses he did.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the rare occasions when Lucian didn't really know Lee before he started painting. And so they met and he came to the studio and Lee was very excited that he was going to sit for a painting. Lucian was in the kitchen. He went back into the studio and Lee had already undressed, and that it was Lee's idea that he always wanted to be naked, and this was mm-hmm. all Lee's decisions as how he wanted to portray himself. And
so
it was a remarkable, there's what, six really remarkable paintings that came out of that friendship.
Unbelievable paintings.
Did
Lucian approach Lee Bowery about sitting for him, or did Lee Bowery suggest that he sit for Lucian?
It was through Lee was doing a performance at the Anthony Doffé Gallery with a two-way mirror, and Lee's whole thing was more of a nightclub act where he'd always sort of dress up and sort of mutate his body and contort his body, and I think they both heard that they were interested. Lucian had heard that Lee was very keen to sit, and it just happened. Those things that sort of suddenly happen rather quickly.
And it was Lee Bowery who introduced Lucian
Big Sue.
Big Sue,
yeah.
And there were at least four fantastic
large portraits
pictures.
Of Sue, yeah.
These paintings of Big Sue. I met Big Sue in London briefly. I was surprised to see actually how petite she seemed. I don't mean small, but sort of almost. She wasn't as big as she seems to be in Lucian's pictures.
She lost a bit of weight since then.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So
it was quite big
so
at the
there
time.
Is. Do you think there is though a little bit of magnification in Lucian's?
Not really. He wouldn't overblow.
Mm-hmm.
The idea. I mean, he wouldn't need to. He wouldn't think like that.
Right.
Because Big Sue was so large anyway, he would never exaggerate that.
Right.
He'd even try and pull it down a bit. He didn't really want to, he wasn't trying to make paintings of oddities. He was just about people, and because mm-hmm. she was larger, that was fine. You know, it wasn't about picking the size because of its own
right
subject.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing about Sue Tilly is how comfortable she is in her body.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and
yeah.
I think Lucien recognized
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And I always must have asked Lucien this 10 times if I ask him once, who decides the pose? Do you decide the pose? Do they
yes.
decide the pose? And he always said, well, it's a combination.
It is a combination. He wants you to be yourself, so you do things, and you're maybe a little bit self-conscious, and he'll say, oh, no, just move that arm down. Or
mm-hmm.
And he edits very strongly with his work, so there'd always be two or three attempts at a mm-hmm. painting before one really got going. So there'd be quite a few failures, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And in each one, you'd move your shoulder or your legs or... I always knew with the portraits I sat for, I knew right from the beginning one was going to be clothed or naked. So that was the beginning, mm-hmm. and then we'd sort of work through things mm-hmm. to see.
I mean, Sue Tilly. I mean, in our show we have this painting,
yeah.
which is very theatrical.
It is.
I mean,
yeah.
she's rolling around
yeah.
on the floor, and then the other painting we have in the show, she's sitting in a chair,
yeah.
In front of the lion carpet, asleep.
Yeah.
So there are these, you know. Moments in which his sitters will be very performative.
Quite.
And he allows that to
yeah.
happen. You know, I think some people think that he... have said to me, they think, well, does he make them get in these poses? Does it, you know? And,
no,
and,
it is and, a very much a combination right. of the painter and the sitter. Very much.
The name of this...
Sabina.
Sabina.
Yeah.
And... This is a series of photographs that
yeah.
you took.
Yeah, and she's a dancer.
Well, it exaggerates the performative element of some yeah. of his sitters.
Yeah. She was fun, Sabina. She was mm-hmm. nice. And just her passion was contemporary dance.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt for a photograph, because I was sort of with right. her alone in the studio, because she's so still in the painting, we could have movement in there. But again, it shows you. I mean, this painting, in the end, Lucien decided wasn't what he was. He wasn't happy with it, and he destroyed this painting. Got destroyed, so it doesn't really exist anymore.
So, this is it. I've never asked you about this, but I'm dying to find out the context of this. This is Lucien Freud in bed with Kate Moss, and. The one thing that I picked up in knowing Lucien briefly
yeah.
in my life was what an attraction he had for that women had for him.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the most and genuine way. There was this attraction. I mean, even at the opening at the National Portrait Gallery, I can't tell you how many women said, you do know, Michael, I was the last one to be with Lucien. There couldn't possibly have been that many last women to be with Lucien.
Oh, you don't?
I mean, you know, and I'm writing all their names down. You know, I got a list this long. But what was the... Anyway, what was the context for this?
So Kate came round one afternoon, and Lucien was feeling a little bit poorly, was sort of stayed in bed. So, you know, I was just upstairs with Kate and Lucien, mm-hmm. and I said, oh, I'd love a photo, Kate, with you and Lucien. Can we do
okay.
something? I said, oh, yeah, I'd love that. And it was Kate that did this. Kate just jumped into bed with him.
Okay.
Had a cuddle.
Well, actually, Lucien said to me, I felt bold enough. It was probably a stupid thing to ask, but Lucien was very generous. I said, so, Lucien, did you ever have sex with any of your models? Which is it's ridiculous, of course. But and he said, what do you think?
Good answer.
And I said...
I'm not adding to it.
And I didn't say anything for a while, and then he was kind enough to kind of blend over and say, you know, after a long evening session, you know, sometimes you cuddle. That was the word he used.
Okay,
he said, you have a glass of wine and you cuddle. And I thought that was a good way of putting it.
Good.
A better way of putting it than I put it, oh, yeah. Certainly. I know very little about this painting, and I wanted to ask you about it, particularly since you took these photographs.
Yeah, yeah.
And how this, you know, so you see the painting is in the background, the almost finished painting. It may be finished at that point, I don't know. And this is the
model.
The model. And then there's these series of photographs that are sort of based on that. So this is unusual because she is performing,
yeah,
in a way, and she's performing to Lucien,
yeah,
and then Lucien is putting himself in the picture. Do you know?
Yeah,
it's a peculiar.
It's Lucien being himself in, mm-hmm, in a very quirky way, and the portrait began with a self-portrait of Lucien. He met this young lady just as the painting was beginning and wanted her in the portrait. And that was his decision, that she was sort of caressing his leg.
I mean, this was her decision. Her
and Lucien's, I think, on this one.
They
I think
were,
you know, they
so
were,
this was a thea- this
yeah,
was a kind
theatrical.
Of a theatrical.
Yeah, it's a sort of jokiness in Lucien, yeah, as well. But it's very odd because then the painting's looking in a mirror. He's looking at a mirror, and then the
right.
mirror is reflecting the painting as well. I mean, it goes around in circles, doesn't it?
Right.
And he's sort of disappearing into that wall of paint as well.
Totally.
But you can
see, one could make a lot of comments about, you know, a portrait artist late in his life, you know, and this young muse, and,
yeah,
and you know, and yet he's kind of disinterested in her clinging.
Yeah.
He's just making the painting, and she's clinging, and
he's having a nice time. This is
you know, people are fascinated by this. It's even more interesting when you see it framed, because
the frame breaks out.
Well,
when he was painting this, the toes of the model were right to the edge of the canvas, and it just stopped the painting from working, really. I mean, it just broke everything up having the toe touch the edge. It lost its sort of realism. So he added this extension, and it's just a thing that Lucien chose to only exaggerate, in a sense, around the foot. He didn't want to take the extension all the way to the top of the canvas. He didn't feel it was necessary.
When he was doing that last portrait of you, I remember seeing it in the early stage, and then I came a year later, and he had added an extension.
Yeah.
To the top, and what?
And one on the side.
And one on the side,
yeah.
And I said, it's bigger. And he said, yes, I added it. He said, it looks a lot better, don't you think? And it did, because he had started the painting from the center of the picture, and worked out without any idea, you know.
Well, he always wanted the forms to dictate the painting.
Exactly.
So as the forms built up and grew, if it needed sort of another 4 or 5 inches on one side, then technically we can do that, so we did it, you know.
Right.
So there were no boundaries to contain
exactly
what he was wanting to paint.
So he wasn't going to let the frame dictate the figure.
No, not at all,
the figure was the important thing,
not
the size of the canvas.
Yeah,
or...
yeah, yeah.
So this is an etching that he's working on?
Yeah, this is the etching plate. So this is the very beginnings of how an etching starts. He draws chalk with very soft chalk onto a smoked copper plate, and then you get a needle, and then you scratch through the wax to the copper, and that's, you know, and then you stick that in acid, and that's how you make an etching. So that's the very very beginnings of.
And is this Pluto?
That's Eli. That's my
dog. It's Eli.
Yeah.
Okay. And one of the fascinating things about being in the house with Lucien and David is that you're in the house with just them, and you think it's this special situation, which it really is. And then there's this one other person there. It's a dog.
Yeah.
And the dog is always there. I mean, wherever I went, the dog would be there. And Lucien's devotion to the dog and yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Pluto is older than...
Pluto is older, the same family.
Same family. They're whippets. Yeah. They're like greyhounds. They're like small greyhounds.
Yeah.
And they really take over. I mean, it's like it's their house.
Yeah.
I mean, he's sitting in the same chair that Andrew Parker Bowles.